Srila Prabhupada ki, Bhakti Vedanta ki, Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jagatai Gopremani ki. Okay. So tonight we will complete chapter 8 of the class, of the section, of the ninth canto. And then, tomorrow night, we will do a overview of chapters 1 to 8 for the section. And then next Monday night, then we'll have the closed book exam and your open book exams, and our presentations are also due at that time. So tonight we'll go through chapter 8, which will cover verses 1 to 30. I'll give that a little time. 1 to 9. So chapter 8 is entitled, The Sons of Sagara Meet Lord Kapiladev, text number 1. Shukadev Goswami continued, the son of Rohita was Harita, and Harita's son was Champa, who constructed the town of Champapuri. The son of Champa was Sudeva, and his son was Vijaya. The son of Vijaya was Varuka, Varuka's son was Vrika, and Vrika's son was Bahuka. The enemies of King Bahuka took away all his possessions, and therefore the king entered the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest with his wife. Bahuka died when he was old, and one of his wives wanted to die with him, following the sati rite. At that time, however, Urva Muni, knowing her to be pregnant, forbade her to die. Knowing that she was pregnant, the co-wives of the wife of Bahuka conspired to give her poison with her food, but it did not act. Instead, the son was born along with the poison. Therefore, he became famous as Sagara, one who was born with poison. Sagara later became the emperor. The place known as Ganga Sagara was excavated by his sons. Sagara Maharaj, following the order of his spiritual master, Urva, did not kill the uncivilized men like the Talajungas, Yavanas, Shakas, Haihayas, and Barbaras. Instead, some of them he made dress awkwardly. Some of them he shaved clean, but allowed to wear moustaches. Some of them he left wearing loose hair. Some he half-shaved. Some he left without underwear, and some without external garments. Thus, these different clans were made to dress differently, but King Sagara did not kill them. Following the instructions of the great sage Urva, Sagara Maharaj performed Ashwamedha sacrifices and thus satisfied the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Controller, the Supersoul of all learned scholars, and the Knower of all Vedic knowledge, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Indra, the King of Heaven, stole the horse meant to be offered at the sacrifice. King Sagara had two wives, Sumati and Keshini. The sons of Sumati, who were very proud of their prowess and influence, following the order of their father, searched for the lost horse. While doing so, they dug into the earth very extensively. Thereafter, in the northeastern direction, they saw the horse near the ashram of Kapila Muni. "Here is the man who has stolen the horse," they said. "He is staying there with closed eyes. Certainly he is very sinful. Kill him. Kill him." Shouting like this, the sons of Sagara, 60,000 altogether, raised their weapons. When they approached the sage opened his eyes. By the influence of Indra, the king of heaven, the sons of Sagara had lost their intelligence and disrespected a great personality. Consequently, fire emanated from their own bodies, and they were immediately burned to ashes. Nitesh, you like to read the purple?
The material body is a combination of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. The already fired within the body, and our practical experience is that the heat of this fire sometimes increases and sometimes decreases. The fire within the bodies of the sons of Sagara Maharaj became so much hotter that all of them burned to ashes. The fire's increased heat was due to the misbehavior toward great personality. Such behavior is called Mahavyatikrama. They were killed by the fire of their own bodies because of insulting a great personality.
Any points here? I can't answer questions like whose fault it was. Any other questions or points?
Just not understanding what Indra would have got, because Indra, it is saying that by the influence of Indra he is doing these things. So Indra should have got much more money.
Yeah, because Indra was the one who has stolen the horse. The sons have arrived there, they thought it was Kapiladev, so now they're approaching Lord Kapiladev to kill him. But actually Indra is the one who should have been attacked. So, any other points?
Bharat and Mr. Chintak, one should not act looking at one's external position. Himself, Sagar Maharaj, they just saw him
points.
From in this canto, repeatedly we are seeing, you know, the misbehavior of different devotees and the consequences of it. What is it leading us to?
The main point, and we spoke about this last week also, is that one has to be very careful about Vaishnava Apara. Vaishnava Apara means Hatimata, Lord Chaitanya's, it means very serious offense. So we have to be very careful about committing offences to the devotees. So you'll see, as we go through this final part of the Bhagavatam leading into the 10th canto, you'll see again and again it is emphasised that we must be careful about offending the devotees. There are different types of offences. You know, there is the Vaishnava Aparad, Jiva Aparad, Seva Aparad, and Nama Aparad. So these are the four basic groups of offences. So Nama Aparad means in the morning, after the Mangalati, then we chant 10 offences against the holy name of Krishna. So we have to be careful about avoiding these 10 offences if we want to succeed in devotional service. Then there's Seva Aparad. Seva Aparad is mentioned by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasa Vidisindo, in chapter 8. The chapter is called Offences to be Avoided. So this means the aparads that we can commit in deity worship. Seva, when you're worshipping the deity, there are different seva aparads which must be avoided. Then generically there is jiva aparad or jana aparad, which means offences to other living entities, which means to ants, mosquitoes, trees, or animals, or any living entity. We have to be careful about those offences. You know, just like Prabhupada one time, Shuti Kirti Prabhu was massaging Prabhupada, and then mosquitoes were coming and biting, so then he hit like that. But then he felt very bad because he hit the mosquito in front of Prabhupada. But Prabhupada said, no, if they are aggressive, like coming to bite you, then you can, like that. But if they're not doing anything, then you should not. Should not walk around the house spraying them and doing all these things. Only if they're attacking, then you can do it. So then, finally there is Vaishnava Parad. So Vaishnava Parad can be of three broad categories. That means corporal, vocal, and mental. So in the mind, with the words, and with the body. So the most serious offense is with the body. If you physically touch on the devotees, physically hit the devotee, then that is the most serious offense. And then, less serious, usually, is if we speak something offensive. We speak very harshly to a devotee. That makes it difficult. And you can say usually less offensive is in the mind. In the Kali Yuga, it is mentioned that we should not commit offenses in the mind. It is specifically said that the offenses will not bear fruit if they are committed in the mind. In other words, if you think something bad about the devotee, you will not get a reaction for that. But still, if you're thinking negative things about the devotee, even though you may not, later on it will lead to speech and to actions, which are negative. So therefore you have to get, even though there's no reaction just for thinking it, but later on it will come. That's the point. Because if you don't change the way you're thinking, then eventually you'll say something or you'll do something. That's the point. So in the mind in Kali Yuga, Krishna is protecting us. He does not give you a reaction to your mental uproar. Otherwise, your body would already have been burned to ashes. Because you've already committed so many offenses in the mind to the devotees. So because of those offenses in the mind, we do not get the reactions in Kali Yuga, because we would not survive otherwise. So therefore, we have to control the mind and the mental offenses, otherwise it will lead to verbal offenses and then maybe even physical offenses. So you have to change the apparatus. But especially devotees have to be very careful about prajalpa. Prajalpa means unnecessary talk. And you see so many times devotees, they speak about other devotees in a negative way. And that is Vaishnava Parada. When we commit offenses towards other devotees, we say things which are not proper about the other devotees. That leads to aparad. Especially if the other devotee hears about it and they become offended. Then you will get reactions. So therefore it says the devotee must be very careful about committing any Vaishnava aparad. Now, the worst is the physical offense. If you physically attack a devotee, so that must be avoided. But for in our case, especially, we have to concentrate on the mental, stop thinking negative things about devotees, and speaking negative things about devotees. Because we do it all the time. And it leads to contamination of the consciousness. Any points? Alright, Chris.
The thing is, you said about speaking about a Vaishnava, and as previously you said that we all are in a hospital and in a curing stage, you know, and we all have disease and we are getting cured by the process of bhakti. So we must have been hurting someone, devotees, and sometimes we get hurt by the devotees, you know. And then we happen to discuss, although maybe this was not right, this has been happening. So, but we cannot tell that devotee. Because he's senior to us. So when we discuss between two people, is that even considered as offense? Because we're discussing, I mean, sometimes we happen to talk among each other and that's the word. But because he's a senior devotee, he's a person. So, still there's always offense that probably we should just tolerate, but sometimes it happens when I discuss it. So how do we deal with that situation?
When someone else is criticizing you?
More than just
the behavior, the sadhachar, you know, when
indirectly by words or something, you feel hurt, but you cannot tell them because
you see him. Yeah, but if it's too much hurtful, you can approach them nicely. You can nicely approach and just say, "Prabhu, you know, this is hurting me that you're saying like that." So you can say something. It's possible. Not impossible. Just because someone's seen it doesn't mean you can't approach them. But it depends. Maybe it's just your false ego. Maybe you deserve to have the criticism that you're getting. Maybe it's hurting you, but maybe you need to reflect more and see that maybe I need to improve. So. Okay. Any other points?
I was just wondering, what was the purpose of doing this?
What's that?
What was the purpose of doing to refrain from those boys?
He took the horse. It mentions other places in the Bhagavatam. If they do too many ashwamedha yagyas, they can take the position of Indra.
So he will appear at his position.
Yeah, could be. Any other point?
Prabhu, regarding speech, recently I heard a lecture. It's one of the pastimes in Ramayana, where Dasharatha Maharaj was, Valmiki Muni came to visit Dasharatha Maharaj.
Just say it quicker, quickly. What's the point?
It's about 5 points, you know, when we speak to others. You know, the first thing is, we should be, the speech that we convey should be pleasant. Second, it should be well-wishing to the other person. Third, we should, whatever we speak, we should speak from Shastra. Fourth, it should be truthful.
Yeah, it's in the Bhagavad Gita.
Beneficial.
Yeah, it's all in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17. These items are mentioned. Speech in the mode of goodness. What's your point?
How we can get to that stage, Guru? What is the observation?
Change your rounds and become Krishna conscious. Then you'll become pure. How means do it. And start practicing it. Do it. There's no secret remedy. So it's just become Krishna conscious and all these things. How do I become enthusiastic? How do I become patient? How do I become determined? Become Krishna conscious. Those things will happen. It's the system. Any other points? Okay. It is sometimes argued that the sons of King Sagara were burned to ashes by the fire emanating from the eyes of Kapila Muni. This statement, however, is not approved by great learned persons, for Kapila Muni's body is completely in the mode of goodness and therefore cannot manifest the mode of ignorance in the form of anger, just as the pure sky cannot be polluted by the dust of the earth. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out in his commentary that a pure devotee is free from the effects of the three modes of nature. Which mode of nature does anger spring from? Tamagun. Tamagun means mode of ignorance. When someone's too much in tamagun, they become angry. So it has been pointed out by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur that Kapila Dev is in the mode of Shuddha Sattva. Shuddha Sattva means pure goodness. So if he's in the mode of pure goodness, how can he become angry? He's not an ordinary person. So therefore, we can understand at this point that if it appears that some anger is coming from Kapila Dev, then that must be transcendental. It is not coming from Kapila, because he is in the mode of Vishuddha Sattva, which means pure goodness. Some people tell the story, and this is mentioned, that some people tell this story and they say that Kapila Dev, when the 60,000 boys, they were coming to kill him, he opened his eyes and he was angry and then he burnt them to ashes. Just like you'll see in the 10th canto, there's a pastime of Shiva. So Lord Shiva, then he burnt Cupid, Madan, to ashes with his eyes, just by the book. So if someone is angry, sometimes we say that. There's a saying in English. If looks could burn, or if stares could burn, you would be. So sometimes people get a very fiery look from the eyes. But it is said here, it was not because of the stare of Kapiladev that they all turned to ashes, it was because of their offense. They committed an offense. They tried to kill or harm someone who is pure. So because they have approached someone who is pure with an offensive mentality, Krishna has combusted them. They became burned to ashes. And they all turned to ashes. And this was just because of a reaction, because of their Vaishnav aparad. Any other points? Kapila Muni enunciated, in the material world, the Sankhya philosophy, which is a strong boat with which to cross over the ocean of nescience. Indeed, a person eager to cross the ocean of the material world can take shelter of this philosophy. In such a greatly learned person situated on the elevated platform of transcendence, how can there be any distinction between enemy and friend? So Lila Maya, you like to read it?
One who is promoted to the transcendental position, Brahma Bhuta, is always jubilant, prasannapi. He is unaffected by the false distinctions between good and bad in the material world. Therefore, such an exalted person is Kama Sarveshu Bhudeshu. That is to say, he is equal towards every one, not distinguishing between friend and enemy. Because he is on the absolute platform, free from material contamination, he is called Paramatma Buddha or Brahma Buddha. Kapila Muni, therefore, was not at all angry at the sons of Sagara Maharaja. Rather, they were burnt to ashes by the heat of their own bodies.
So, any points here? So, many places in the Gita, Krishna teaches us that one who is pure or exalted in consciousness, he does not see friend or enemy. That is the position of someone who is elevated in Krishna consciousness. So, Kapiladev, as we said in the previous verse, he is situated on the platform of Vishuddhasattva. So, when you are on the platform of Vishuddhasattva, you understand your spiritual form. So that is called Brahma Bhuta, Prasanatma, Na Sochiti, Na Kanchiti. So this is the position of someone who is fully Krishna conscious. He is Brahma Bhuta. What does Brahma Bhuta mean? Brahma Bhuta means he understands that you are spiritual. You understand you are not the body, you are the soul. This is an elevated platform. None of us are on this level. The elevated level, that we understand we have a soul. Prasanatma. Prasanatma means always blissful. Why? Because he is acting on the spiritual platform. Prasanatma. Nasochiti. Naso, nakankshiti. No
lamentation,
no hankering. In other words, he does not see things on the material platform, dualities. Good and bad, happiness and distress, friends and enemies. So in this material world, we see everything in terms of friend and enemy. This person is my friend, but this one is the enemy. We see like that because of duality. But on the spiritual platform, one does not see that. So Kapiladev is on the highest platform of Vishuddhasattva, the most pure, elevated state of consciousness. So how could he see friends and enemies? So it is not Kapiladev, he did not become angry and he did not burn the boys to ashes. They were destroyed by how did they all die?
They hid in their body.
Yeah, they committed aparad. Their aparad burned them. It wasn't Kapiladev who directly looked negatively at them. Because when you offend a devotee, Krishna takes offense. Even if you do not take offense, someone may offend you, but you do not take offense. Sometimes someone is offended. Lila Maya, what's your problem? Just concentrate.
No, Guru, she told something. I wanted to write it down.
Yeah, I can't concentrate.
Okay.
No, just focus. No. So, the devotee may not take the offense. In other words, someone offends us, but we do not take offense. But Krishna takes offense. That's the point. We may offend another devotee. The devotee does not take offense, but Krishna takes offense. And that's why you get the reaction. So here, they offended Kapiladev. Kapiladev, he did not take offense, but Krishna did, and then they were all burnt to ashes. So the reaction will come from Krishna himself. Any points? Okay. Among the sons of Sagara Maharaj was one named Asamanjasa, who was born from the king's second wife, Keshini. The son of Asamanjasa was known as Amshuman, and he was always engaged in working for the good of Sagara Maharaj, his grandfather. Formerly, in his previous birth, Asamanjasa had been a great mystic yogi, but by bad association he had fallen from his exalted position. Now, in this life, he was born in a royal family and was a Jati Smara. That is, he had the special advantage of being able to remember his past birth. Nonetheless, he wanted to display himself as a miscreant, and therefore he would do things that were abominable in the eyes of the public and unfavorable to his relatives. He would disturb the boys sporting in the river, Sarayu, by throwing them into the depths of the water. So basically he was drowning the boys. So in his previous life, he was a great yogi. But then, he took birth as a king. Right? But sometimes, when the great personalities take birth, they don't want to become involved in this world. Right? So just like Jad Bharata, we heard of in the fifth canto, right? Jad Bharata. Then we heard that Jad Bharata, he acted, even though he was very exalted in consciousness, he acted like he did not want to become involved in this material world. So those who are very exalted in consciousness, they don't want to become involved in this material world. So therefore, Jad Bharata, he held himself back. He did not expose who he actually was. And in the same way, this great personality, he was a great yogi, but he did not want to become involved. So he acted in such a way that other people would not want to associate with him. Yeah? So he drowned the boys. And then everyone thought, I don't want to associate with him. So his father said, okay, out. Right, go to the forest. Yeah? But then we read that he brings them all back to life. Yeah? So I don't know why. If you ask me why he did this, what is the answer? I don't know. Just in case someone is trying to ask the question, why did he do this? I don't know why.
I want to ask you.
I knew I was waiting for. I knew you were going to ask. So why did he do this? I don't know why he did that. But the basic lesson is that a devotee does not want to associate with non-devotees. That's the basic lesson. It doesn't mean you drown the other. Don't start doing things so everyone will think you're
crazy.
Completely puggled. Don't start doing it. But the point is, just keep yourself away from the non-devotees. That's the point. That's why he was doing this. Well, I don't understand. Okay. So in devotional life, one thing that devotees are very fond of is solitude. Solitude means to be alone. In our devotional life, we need to have a balance between the two, especially as a grihastha. You have so many family responsibilities, husband and wife, children, relatives, friends, society. There are so many responsibilities, but in order to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, you need to spend some time alone. You can't simply spend all of your time with other people, or all of the time. You need to also have, in English we say downtime, or means private time. Also, everyone needs that. In order to sustain themselves and inspire themselves and become more Krishna conscious, we need that in our lives. So this is the point, that in order to become Krishna conscious, we need to have special time where we can just focus on retreating from our responsibilities and just focusing on our Krishna consciousness. So there has to be that for every devotee. You have to work your life out where there's a part of every day, if you can, where you have some time to yourself just to focus on your Krishna consciousness. Every week, every month, and especially every year. In Manu Samhita it says, one day in the week should be a day of rest. One day you should just rest. Don't work. Then it says, 1 month of every year you should go on pilgrimage or rest. Now, 1 month you should take off every year. 4 weeks every year, and you should go on pilgrimage or do some spiritual activity. And then it says 1 year in every 7 years. Every 7 years you should take 1 year off. Okay. I've never done that. I've never had a whole year, but I don't know what I'd do with myself for a whole year. But back in those days people used to walk. So you walk from like South India to Vrindavan. That would take a whole year to go there and then to come back. Like that. These days, you know, a whole year. But at least 1 month a year we should use just for spiritual activity. That's the point. Any points? Because asamanjasa engaged in such abominable activities, his father gave up affection for him and had him exiled. Then Asamanjasa exhibited his mystic power by reviving the boys and showing them to the king and their parents. After this, Asamanjasa left Ayodhya.
Because of his mystic power, he did not forget his previous ancestors. Thus, he could give life to the dead. By exhibiting wonderful activities in relation to the dead children, he certainly attracted the attention of the king and the people in general. Then he left that place immediately.
So what are the points here?
How does he have power to kill somebody and bring them back to life?
Yeah, it's mystic power. Mystic power. Any other points? So, it is described that in devotional service, then we do not lose any of our spiritual advancement from previously. Just like it says in the Gita, Nihavik Rama Nashosti Prachevayo Navijite Svapama Vyasadamasha Trayati Mahadobe. So you just make a little bit of advancement that always stays with you in Krishna consciousness. So for devotees, if we just make some small amount of advancement, we always keep that advancement with us. So in his previous life, he'd been a great yogi. That means in the future, he still had his potency. Even in the next life, the potency was still there. So as a devotee, whatever advancement you make, that will always be with you. And you will always progress in Krishna consciousness. So Krishna himself says, nothing is taken away. So this great personality, he kept all of his potency and he was in the next life. The same for devotee. Even if we don't complete it in this life, Prabhupada says, if you're 50% next lifetime, you start off at 51. And then you continue from that point. Nothing is lost. Any points?
Will you call Mystic Yogi a devotee?
What's that?
A Mystic Yogi a devotee. Will you call him a devotee?
No.
No, but still the... I mean, they same also thing. Start from the place where they...
Everything, even a karmic. When we're born, we have the same subtle body that we had in the previous life. So if you've become very intelligent, when you're born, automatically you'll be intelligent in this life. You see so many people, they born and they know so many things. Even when they're 5 years old, they can do so many things. So the famous example was Mozart. You heard of Mozart? The famous musician, classical musician in the West, in Europe. So he wrote so many symphonies. You know those favorite, maybe you don't know so much from India, but in Europe, they're very famous, classical music. So when he was 5 years old, he was writing classical music. Because obviously in the previous life, he'd studied all these things. Or one time Prabhupada said, Ravi Shankar. Who is Ravi Shankar? Yeah, he's a famous sitar player. Right? So Prabhupada said he'd been playing sitar for 7 lifetimes. That's how he became so good. 7 lifetimes of practice. So when someone is born, we see they have so much ability, even not devotees. That's coming from previously. Krishna says, Jnanam smriti apohanam cha. Whatever you have from your previous life, that comes with you. Any points?
It doesn't happen all the time, though.
No, because Krishna says, Jnanam smriti apohanam cha. He can make you forget everything as well.
Mm.
So. Okay. Well, King Parikshit, when all the inhabitants of Ayodhya saw that their boys had come back to life, they were astounded, and King Sagara greatly lamented the absence of his son. Thereafter, Amshuman, the grandson of Maharaj Sagara, was ordered by the king to search for the horse. Following the same path traversed by his uncles, Amshuman gradually reached the stack of ashes and found the horse nearby. The great Amshuman saw the sage named Kapila, the saint who is an incarnation of Vishnu, sitting there by the horse. Amshuman offered him respectful obeisances, folding his hands, and offered him prayers with great attention. Amshuman said, My Lord, even Lord Brahma is to this very day unable to understand your position, which is far beyond himself, either by meditation or by mental speculation. So what to speak of others like us, who have been created by Brahma in various forms as demigods, animals, human beings, birds, and beasts. We are completely in ignorance, therefore, how can we know you, who are the transcendence?
All living entities are born into delusion, overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. All living entities in the material world are influenced by the three modes of material nature. Even Lord Brahma is in the mode of goodness. Similarly, the demigods are generally in the mode of passion, and living entities lower than the demigods, such as human beings and animals, are in the mode of ignorance. understand Lord Kapiladeva. Because you are beyond even the direct and indirect intelligence of Lord Brahma, he prayed, unless we are enlightened by your worship, it will not be possible for us to understand you. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. The Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can be understood by one who is favored by the Lord, and the Lord cannot be understood by others.
So what are the points there? Okay. So Prabhupada is pointing out that if we are under the modes of material nature, it's very difficult for us to understand or ascertain the advancement of someone who is more advanced than us. So generally, we can understand only someone who is equal to us. Generally, hey, you two boys, what is this? Huh? And be good. So we can understand someone who is equally as advanced as us, but someone who is more advanced, that is much more difficult to understand. So when we are conditioned by the modes of material nature, it is very hard for us to understand someone who has higher consciousness. Someone who has higher consciousness can be understood by someone who has a similar state of consciousness. So it is mentioned here that when you're very heavily conditioned, so people these days, they're very heavily conditioned. That's why they can't understand the devotees. Because they cannot understand what we're... Because they are so conditioned by the modes of nature, they cannot understand someone who's higher in consciousness. So therefore, devotees are very careful about dealing with the non-devotees. Right? Because their consciousness is much lower. Right? Whereas you see someone who is very advanced in Krishna consciousness, then because he is... exalted in consciousness, he can understand where other people, so he will discriminate who to associate with, who not to associate with. Non-devotees cannot discriminate like that. So how do we understand Krishna? We have to come to the platform of Shuddha Sattva, purified goodness. And Prabhupada points out in the beginning of the nectar instruction, in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam first canto, that a devotee has to come from the platform of the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, to the mode of goodness. He says that in the introduction to the Upadeshamrita, or the Nectar of Instruction. This book is meant to bring us to the platform of goodness. He says that in the very introduction. Above the platform of passion and ignorance. Because from the platform of goodness, you can begin to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. A mode of passion, mode of ignorance, it is more difficult. You make advancement, but it is much more challenging, much more difficult. But when you come to the platform of the mode of goodness, then it's much easier to progress in devotional service and to reach the platform of Vishuddha Sattva, or pure goodness. And Prabhupada points out that pure goodness is reached from the mode of goodness. In other words, mode of goodness is a springboard to pure goodness. So devotees, we have to learn what is the mode of goodness. Many devotees don't even understand what the mode of goodness is. We're very much molded or developed by the foods that we eat. In English, we have the saying, you are what you eat. So very much our consciousness is affected by what we eat. And you see, many devotees, they eat in the mode of ignorance and the mode of goodness, and the mode of passion. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? What does he say is food in the mode of passion?
Spices.
He says too spicy. What else does he say?
Too salty.
Too pungent. Too salty. Too sweet. Yeah, you can say too opulent. All these things. And how do most devotees eat? Right? Too spicy. Right? Too sweet. Too salty. Too like that. And their consciousness becomes affected. How can you practice mode of goodness? Actually, it mentions in the Vrindavan Mahimamrita by Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, he says that an advanced devotee, he'll just eat the fruit that drops from the trees. Right? He won't even pick the fruit off the tree. But he just takes the fruit that's already fallen, right, and just eat that, totally in the mode of goodness. And this will affect the consciousness. It also mentions, Prabhupada mentions previously, that the sages, they would live just on milk. Because that keeps them in the mode of goodness. So, if you want to develop the mode of goodness, you have to understand what is the mode of goodness, and that will take you to pure goodness. So it is important that devotees practice devotional service from the platform of the mode of goodness. Practicing devotional service is mentioned by Kapila Dev in the third canto of the Bhagavad Gita. Practicing devotional service in the mode of ignorance and passion is very difficult. You can make advancement, but it's very difficult. Whereas practicing the mode of goodness is much easier to advance in Krishna consciousness. Any points? My Lord, you are fully situated in everyone's heart, but the living entities covered by the material body cannot see you, for they are influenced by the external energy, conducted by the three modes of material nature. Their intelligence, being covered by Sattva-gun, Rajagun, and Tamagun, they can see only the actions and reactions of these three modes of material nature. Because of the actions and reactions of the modes of ignorance, whether the living entities are awake or sleeping, they can see only the workings of material nature. They cannot see your Lordship. So, Raj, you'd like to leave them.
Unless one is situated in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, one is unable to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is situated in everyone's heart. However, because the conditioned soul are influenced by material nature, they can see only the actions and reactions of material nature, but not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One therefore must purify himself internally and externally. To keep ourselves externally clean, we should bathe 3 times daily, and for internal cleanliness, we must cleanse the heart by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. The members of the Krishna conscious movement must always follow this principle. Then it will one day be possible to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face.
What are the points there? The verse with Om Pavitra Pavitro Va Savavastam Pito Vivanya Hasmarepa Vidikaksham Savaya Vyantarahasuchi. We chant this mantra before we go to do deity worship, which says Om Apavitra Pavitro Va. Whether you are Pavitra or Apavitra, whether you are pure or impure. If you remember, Yasmaret Pundarikaksham. Smarana means to remember. By remembering Krishna, you become purified. If you don't remember Krishna, you are contaminated. So what is the most important element of the deity worship? It is the Bhuta Shuddhi. It means purifying the consciousness before you enter the altar. So we're trained as brahmanas to do Bhuta Shuddhi. Bhuta Shuddhi means, what does Shuddhi mean? Shuddha. Shuddha means purify. Bhuta Shuddhi means to purify the subtle body. So before we enter onto the altar to do the deity worship, first we purify the mind and the internal subtle body so that we can worship the deity in a purified state of consciousness. So Prabhupada taught us that we must be clean and punctual whenever we do the deity worship. So externally that means we have to learn what is cleanliness. Unfortunately, most devotees don't even understand what is cleanliness externally. I see devotees all the time. Before they go into the altar to worship, they do different things, which makes them contaminated. If you touch the children, you're contaminated. Children are always muchi. So you take bath and everything, put on your fresh cloth, come to the, but you touch the children before you get to the temple. You're contaminated. You're not fit to go onto the altar. So many things. Now, we did a seminar on cleanliness a couple of years ago. And devotees have to understand these subtle points. You have to remain pure. You have to understand what is purity. Just like you take your clothes off the clothesline, you put them on the floor, right, and then you start folding them up, but as soon as you put them on the floor, they're contaminated. Because everyone walks on the floor. The floor is not clean. So you have to understand these different subtle points. What is actual cleanliness in Krishna consciousness? So it says here the most important element is internal purity. Before you chant the Hare Krishna mantra, you have to do Buddha Shuddhi. This is what advanced devotees do. If you go to our Japa retreats, Burujan Prabhu and Sachinandan, so they teach us this. Before you do Japa, you have to do Buddha Shuddhi, which means purify your subtle body. So you have to meditate on different sacred personalities, chant different mantras. Right? Purify yourself before you chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Then you will get the effect. Stop throwing the paper planes around Prabhupada's room. This is not a playground. Yeah. And this will bring us out of the contamination of the three gunas, or the three modes of material nature. So we purify our consciousness to lift ourselves out of the effects of the modes of nature. That's the point. Because we are all heavily conditioned by the three modes of nature. So by doing Buddha Shuddhi, or purifying the subtle body, it brings us out of the contamination so that we can worship Krishna on the eventually on the transcendental platform. Any points?
Uji, here you can say that here it is said that if you are not then we cannot see the Supreme Personality. So that means if we are pure, can we understand what Krishna wants us to do or something like that?
Yeah, if you're pure. Just like Prabhupada, he could directly commune or consult with Krishna. So when you're pure, you can directly consult with Krishna. Any other point?
Is this the shloka which you have to recite before starting to chant the japa? Which you just on this verse?
You can. Yeah, it's one of the shlokas. Before you do deity worship, you chant this one. Before we go into the altar worship, we chant this. So, yeah, before, if you like, you can chant. Any other points? Okay. Oh my Lord, sages free from the influence of the three modes of material nature, sages such as the four Kumaras, Sanat, Sanaka, Sanandana, and Sanartan, are able to think of you, who are concentrated knowledge. But how can an ignorant person like me think of you? So once again, Prabhupada points out in the purport that we have to become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. As long as you're conditioned by the material modes of nature, you cannot understand Krishna properly. So we must become... And what is the methodology to become free from the influence of the modes? It is devotional service itself. By performing bhakti, it purifies the consciousness, the heart, the mind, so that we can understand Krishna. So only by continuous devotional service, ahoituki, apratihata, uninterrupted, unmotivated devotional service, can we become purified in our consciousness. Text 24. O completely peaceful Lord, although material nature, fruitive activities, and their consequent material names and forms are your creation, you are unaffected by them. Therefore, your transcendental name is different from material names, and your form is different from material forms. You assume a form resembling a material body just to give us instructions, like those of Bhagavad Gita, but actually you are the supreme original person. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So here the Lord is being purified as being transcendental. And we will also become transcendental by serving Krishna. So that is the process. Yeah. Process is to perform bhakti yoga. Asado pari vinimuktam tapharatvena nimalam rishikesha. Rishikena, rishikesha sevanam bhakti uchite. By serving Krishna, the master of the senses, then our senses become purified. So that is the system. Krishna is transcendental. Pavitra, he is on the transcendental platform. Vishuddha sattva. By serving Krishna, we also become purified and eventually we can reach that platform also. Oh my Lord, those whose hearts are bewildered by the influence of lust, greed, envy and illusion are interested only in false hearth and home in this world created by your Maya. Attached to home, wife and children, they wander in this material world perpetually. O Supersoul of all living entities, the personality of Godhead, simply by seeing you, I have now been freed from all lusty desires, which are the root cause of insurmountable illusion and bondage in the material world. O King Parikshit, when Ashuman had glorified the Lord in this way, the great sage Kapila, the powerful incarnation of Vishnu, being very merciful to him, explained to him the path of knowledge. The personality of Godhead said, my dear Ashuman, here is the animal sought by your grandfather for sacrifice. Please take it. As for your forefathers, who have been burned to ashes, they can be delivered only by Ganges water and not by any other means. Thereafter, Amshuman circumambulated Kapila Muni and offered him respectful obeisances. Bowing his head after fully satisfying him in this way, Ashuman brought back the horse meant for the sacrifice. And with this horse, Maharaj Sagara performed the remaining ritualistic ceremonies. After delivering charge of his kingdom to Ashuman, and thus being freed from all material anxiety and bondage, Sagara Maharaj, following the means instructed by Aurava Muni, achieved the supreme destination. Any other points? Okay. So next Monday, we will have the closed book exam. Tomorrow night, we'll do an overview of chapters 1 to 8. And then next Monday we'll have the exam starting at 7 o'clock in the theatre. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.